Hello everyone. Oh, welcome, welcome. Paul Levee here. Another episode of Why Am I So Happy? Sharing with you today an amazing gentleman. I myself have had the honor of being one of his clients and working with him for quite some time now. I just love everything about Dr. Troy Munson. Let me share a bit about Troy quickly. Dr. Munson has been practicing for over 20 years as a wellness chiropractor. Before attending chiropractic school, he worked in his parents' health food store from the age of 10 until 21. All that Dr. Munson has been working in the healthcare world for over 30 years. I'm just so thrilled to have you here. Thank you. Thank you, doctor.
It is so great to be back, Paul. I'm glad to be in front of you again.
I love it. I love it. For those of you that have not heard his show on my Voice America show, For the Love of Reiki, please check that out. I want to throw that out there. So, doctor, share a little bit about where you're at, your information, and just give us some of your awesome inspiration that you do all the time.
Would love to. Paula, first, you know, our office, we feel that people are powerful, especially in this day and age when people don't feel powerful. And how we people get back their power, because it's nothing I can give them, it's innate, it's inside them. So how we help them get back their power is we do this by correcting neurology, which is the brain, the nervous system that controls everything. And we balance and restore nutrition. This then balances hormones and obviously eliminates toxicity. The body becomes stronger and the person begins to exhibit strength and happiness and joy, everything that comes inside is right there for them.
I love it. I love it. Let's talk a little bit happiness. What is your scope on that? What view do you have on that, which may enable others to find that happiness that so many people seek?
You got it. Happiness is, you know, it's something to be understood, and maybe the best way to realize where happiness comes from is to really understand also why we become unhappy. You know, we have this, what I like to call this monkey sitting on our shoulder all the time that chirps in our head. And some people will call it the ego. Some people call it the flesh. In the Jewish culture, they call it the Satan nature. There's mentions of it and definitions all throughout every type of religion, walk of people and everything. It's basically our head that regurgitate stuff from our past all the time. And here's the rub. The ego is unhappy when it either gets what it wants or it doesn't get what it wants.
Wow.
Think about that. We want and we want and we want. We get it, and then all of a sudden, okay, we're no longer happy with that. We want more.
Yes.
And so we continually want, and that's part of it. So always looking outside of us to fulfill us, we kind of innately know that's kind of a dead end. And, you know, so happiness comes from a very deep place inside of us. I'll often ask folks that are unhappy or angry or they have a lot of emotion when I'm working with them and we're trying to get through that, and I'll ask them, I'll say, are we wired for happiness or wired for unhappiness? And I have actually had people say we're wired for unhappiness. And I'll follow up that question. I'll say, okay, if that's true, what feels better to you, to be happy or to be sad? And they'll think about it only for a moment. And they say, you know what, I really like being happy. I say, it's true. That's what we're wired for. That's what we desire. We all desire happiness, peace, love, happiness. Ask anybody. You know, we'll ask them, what do you want? Well, I want a new car. Well, why? Well, because mine doesn't work very well. Well, why else? Because I would feel better about myself. Well, what would that do? Well, that would make me happy. And so the end result of all of our wanting is this desire to be happy.
Yes. Yes. So what do we do that interrupts that? What else gets in the way?
Well, in our lives, in a word, it's stress. You know, we all know it, it's stress. And we have these three stressors that are always pounding on us. It's like we're this beach and it's relentless. There's these waves that come in. And so it's the mental stress that we handle in our daily lives, which, you know, you go back 200 years, we were basically worried about food. Where's my food coming from? You know, where is the next meal coming from? How can I keep my family safe from the elements? You know, they were much more basic. In our society now, that's not necessarily the issue for the most part. We're now much more beyond, and we have these silly, what we call first world problems. You know, my cell phone won't work, or my car didn't start, or I don't get my parking spot. You know, really crazy things that we'll decide to stress over mentally. But now we also have the physical stresses from maybe not being as active because there's so much convenience in our life and our body becomes weakened. And every time we exercise, we actually produce natural feel-good chemicals in our brain that makes us feel great and happy. And then the third stress is chemical. Every second, I think a new chemical is produced in this world that our body must cope with and handle. Now, for years, those chemicals have been increasing and making us more and more toxic, but are we handling it? For the most part, we are, but eventually it is going to have its way with us. It always will. We can only make our environment so polluted and so toxic before it just is so hard on us that we can't even survive, and we don't want to get there. But those are the three types of stresses that then now conflict in the body, those hormones that are outside of our body, that are in the paint on our walls, the dye in our clothing, the chemicals in the carpet, in our desks, the veneers, you know, paper. All these chemicals tend to mimic hormones. And those hormones then now disrupt our own natural hormones, which make it tougher to be happy. Not impossible, but certainly more difficult.
Yes. So what avenues can a person take to, you know, balance out what's coming into our lives and the stresses that we have?
Absolutely, there's things that we can do. And so one of the things that I teach first is how do we begin to get out of our head? And that's the most important thing, because every athlete realizes that 90%+ of the game is all about the mental performance. How am I mentally prepared? Because when we look at all these Olympic athletes that are getting ready to perform for us in what, a couple months?
Yes.
They're going to train as hard as they can physically, and their body's going to be in top physical condition. But now, who's going to win? It's going to be that person that is the most mentally prepared and mentally tough.
Wow.
So how do we begin to start letting go of this mind? And it can be really a veritable monster. And so the first thing that we teach is we teach a simple breathing technique. And we're going to go over that today.
Excellent.
So when we breathe, we don't think about it. We just breathe. Well, if we begin to consciously breathe, we now begin to disrupt the thoughts in our head, stop them, and focus and put our attention somewhere else. And so when we breathe, we can just focus simply on breathing. And when I tell people this, I said, it's not, you know, we're not taking breaths and consciously taking deep breaths. That's not conscious breathing. Conscious breathing is watching the body very quietly when it wants to take a breath in and when it wants to push a breath out. Not forcing it to do it, but merely watching, which isn't all that easy. I tell folks, if you can do 3 conscious breaths and not get your train of thought going in another direction, goodness, you've succeeded. I mean, that's huge, because we'll breathe about 17 times a minute. So 3 breaths is a good, you know, 8 seconds, maybe 10 seconds. That's a significant amount of time that your mind is quiet and watchful, and that's enormous. Now there's another breathing technique we can do that is very helpful. So in our body, we have a sympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system is what responds to stress. It's what happens when we stand up. Our sympathetic nervous system becomes dominant and says, okay, I'm in the environment, I've got to really watch things, and I've got to do what I need to do. And then we have a parasympathetic system that is more the shutting down, calming down, relaxing, and being at peace nervous system. And when we sit, we're balanced between those two. but we can activate the parasympathetics and calm the sympathetics or the stress mode down quite a bit by holding our breath. And so this is how it happens. If I'm breathing and I'm just doing my thing, maybe typing a paper, whatever it is, talking to people, when I'm doing that, my sympathetics are running everything. And so this autonomic system without our control is breathing for me. But when all of a sudden I hold my breath, the autonomic system, these two systems all of a sudden get concerned. Hey, what's happening? He's holding his breath. Why is he doing this? What's going on? And so it's beginning to divert attention away and now put it right back into the breathing so that my mind can literally shut up. It's you're kind of giving commands to the brain to say, look, I'm in control. It's my kingdom to run. It's not yours. So that's how we begin to do it. So when we hold the breath, we now begin to take away that stress response and now begin to calm down.
So would you say then when we hold the breath, we take a deep breath in and we hold that and then we release?
Yep. And I would hold it for a good 20 seconds.
Okay.
And then release. And I would do that 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. You may do it a bunch. Like the more stressed out you are, the more I'd be focusing on holding your breath.
Yes.
And then releasing. And so calming down that system. There's little tricks to use that begin that process to run.
Oh, I love it. I love it. All of this is so fantastic. Well, we are going to take a quick break. Before we go, Doctor, will you share your contact information quickly with the listeners?
Absolutely. I see clients all throughout the United States, and I do phone consults with people that I've never even met. And I help them nutritionally and all activities of life. I clear emotions, all of that. And people will call my office, and the number there is 360-893-8586. And I'm in a small town in Washington State, but I handle clients all over the country.
Yes, and I, as one of your clients, I think you're amazing. I think you're awesome.
Thanks.
So, everyone, we will be right back with some more from Dr. Munson. Hello, everyone. Thank you. Thank you. If you're just joining us, I am with Dr. Troy Munson. He is sharing some fantastic information with us on stress, happiness, nutrition. I would like to ask, Doctor, we've been talking about stress and emotions, breathing. How can we work into our lives taking care of our body, being healthier, which of course will make us happier? What do you recommend, and what things would you like to point out in that area?
Absolutely. And it's true. The healthier our body is, the happier our cells are, the better we feel, the more energy we have, the better we sleep. All those things are very possible when we really start working into nutrition and other things. So breathing kind of interrupts thoughts, but now we need to back that with certain nutrition. The first and foremost thing that I'll do with people when they come into me is I'll explain to them how blood sugar and maintaining correct blood sugar is of paramount importance in maintaining a good hormonal level so that we feel as good as we were supposed to feel, like when we did when we were 18, 19, 20. And a little window into that is most of us by age 30, 32, you know, hopefully not as early as 25, but maybe by 40, we're all starting to feel our age. And we think, well, this is just a part of aging. And literally, if our body is at nutritional capacity and we're eating correctly, we literally should feel as good at 60, 70, and 80 as we do at 20, 25. And for most of us, that absolutely does not happen. And so what makes us young and stay young and feel vibrant is really hormones. So when most folks come in to see me, the first thing I'm going to do is start balancing hormones with them because I know we're going to get the biggest gains there. And in order to spare hormones in their body, I have to stabilize blood sugar. And many people think, well, you know, I'm not diabetic. I don't have hypoglycemia, but what they're doing with their diet is they're spiking blood sugar all day long and they don't realize it.
Yes.
And so let's talk about blood sugar, what happens. So our normal diet, let's say we backtrack, like we said, 200 years ago. And let's say we're a farmer. And it's summertime right now, and so we're growing crops. We're picking berries. We can spike blood sugar during the day by, you know, gorging on the berries that became ripe that night and that morning. And we eat berries, you know, and then we go back to the field and we work hard. And we go back to the house and we're eating, you know, meat. We're eating eggs, or we're eating our root vegetables, or some of the vegetables, the greens that have come up that we planted over the winter are now ready. And we're doing this. And now towards the end of summer, all of a sudden the grains are starting to come in. And we'll start eating grains. Well, what happens when we start eating grains towards the winter months? We all fatten up. And so we fatten up for winter. And then the grains start running out about December, maybe the first part of January. We have our last feast, Christmas. And then now we're eating our dried meats, our root vegetables, you know, the root cellar. You know, we're eating all of our canned stuff, and there's a few things we can grow in the wintertime, and then we thin out for the spring. And at the end of spring, you know, early summer, the berries are coming back in. We're now getting some blood sugar again, and we're spiking it once a day, and we're working hard in the fields. And, you know, our body thins out, and we have this rhythm of our body. In the winter, we fatten up. And then we thin out in the spring, and then we fatten up in the winter. But now our diet is, what can we do? How often can we have grains?
Yes, yes.
Every day. We can have grains 5, 6, 8 times a day if we wish. And so what the grains are doing is they're packed sugar. And when that packed sugar hits water, it explodes into trillions and trillions and trillions of molecules of sugar all at once. Now, if we eat, like, let's say, raspberries are on right now, and we eat a raspberry, that's just plain sugar. It releases quickly, but nothing like a grain. A grain is thousands of times faster at releasing sugar into the blood than something like a simple sugar like a berry. And so what happens when we eat that grain is we instantly spike blood sugar. Now, if we spike blood sugar up too much, the brain doesn't like it. And so it pulls insulin into the system to drop blood sugar quickly because it's too dangerous. When that happens, it drops it too quickly, and now it actually bottoms out. And the brain must have sugar. It cannot use protein and it cannot use fat for energy. It must have sugar. That's why we monitor sugar so closely in our blood. Our body does that naturally. And so when we bottom out blood sugar, it triggered the brain to tell the system, hey, there's a famine. We're lacking blood sugar. We're not stable. And so it takes our sex hormones and converts them to cortisol, and cortisol mobilizes blood sugar and now tries to bring it back up. And so every time we do grains, we're having these highs and lows in blood sugar, and the body sees it as very unstable, and it is stressful to the body. It makes us really chaotic hormonally. And it now uses our hormones at a faster rate and converts them into chemicals we don't want them to convert in. And we all know from the commercials now on television that cortisol makes fat. It messes up our thinking. It messes up digestion. It burns muscle. It does everything we don't want it to do. And so that's cortisol. It's a stress hormone. And so when we continually eat grains, we do that. And so the first thing I have people do is begin to have a game plan of how to get away from grains completely.
Get away completely. Okay.
And it's not easy. Have you experienced it?
Yes. Well, I myself, as your client, I love quinoa, but I've cut back on that quinoa. And I do have to say to everyone out there from the bottom of my heart, if you can go see Dr. Munson, it's going to be one of the best decisions you've ever made. Since we have tweaked my diet a little bit and working with the doctor, I feel so good. I sleep good. And I swear I look younger. I do. I feel younger, and I think I look younger. So
that's awesome.
But anyway, you know, you've helped me with that to kind of balance the different areas of what I'm, and I feel the difference.
And absolutely. You've now spared hormones, and so your hormones are actually in a younger phase. So why wouldn't you look better?
Yeah.
You know, that's the way our body was designed. So here we have hormones that we want to protect. And so the first thing we do is we would definitely do making sure that we balance blood sugar. We can spike blood sugar once a day with a fruit or something. That's absolutely acceptable. But spiking it 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times, that's really, really hard on the body, and that's stressful. And that's a stress that we can instantly, right now, begin to decrease and help. So some people out there will try to do bioidentical hormones. We don't want to do that because the body knows how to regulate its own hormones. If we try to do it externally by giving, you know, synthetic hormones or plant-based hormones that are less damaging, we still have to try to mimic or regulate a body that's way more dynamic than we could ever be. It knows exactly when to release them, exactly when to make them active, and exactly when to pull them out of the system and say, hey, you're done. Game over. Get out of the playing field. So the body is way better at regulating and making its own hormones, and that's what we want to strengthen. We don't want to do it synthetically. We want the body to start fixing itself, and that's what we focus on. Excellent. And then next is nutrition-wise. Our body, as we do all these grains, we deplete ourselves of a lot of minerals. I do a lot of mineral therapy with folks, complete, you know, alfalfa, kelp, things like that, that are going to start pouring minerals back into the system, because in order to process sugars, we use up a lot of minerals and B vitamins. And when we use up B vitamins, we don't feel as energetic. Our blood vessels now become engorged because they're swollen. We bruise easily. We don't feel as happy. We don't sleep as well. We wake up more at night. But as we start to spare B vitamins and minerals, all of a sudden, our body starts really catching up and healing, and now we really start seeing some tremendous effects on health and the ability to handle stress and enjoy life and have more happiness.
Yes, I love it. I love it. We have just a couple minutes left today, Doctor. What last words would you like to share with the audience?
You know, no program should not forget about how do we begin to change one's thoughts. We think a lot of thoughts that we really shouldn't think. And that is what we call being the king or queen of our kingdom. And so our thoughts become very important, to look at every thought and say, you know what, is this a thought that I really want to continue to have? Or do I want to change that and begin to direct my life in a different way? And we start training people how to begin to let go of thoughts. We could let go of every thought we've ever thunk, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But instead, what if we let go of a tendency in our life to do something, or a way that we think, or a way that we do something? When we let go of that tendency and really see it for what it is, we let go of millions of thoughts, and we begin to weaken negative emotions. And as we let go of negative emotions, we now let more joy, more happiness, more ease, more energy in terms of how we resonate with other people, and we keep negativity out of our life because it can't even exist in our environment. And so those become even more powerful, and we teach that to each client.
I love it. Fascinating. Your expansive knowledge is just so amazing, Dr. Munson. You do so much for others. I just want to thank you so much. So amazing.
It's been a pleasure to be on your show. I appreciate it every moment.
Oh, you are so welcome. I am just so honored to have you on the show, and I would love to do another show down the road.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Oh, thank you. And to our listeners out there, thank you so much. So happy to share Dr. Munson with you today, and have a happy, happy day. Hugs and blessings to everyone. Everyone, this is Paula Vale, founder of Wellness Inspired and host of the Why Am I So Happy show on BBS Radio. My passion is sharing the beautiful healing modality of Reiki with the world. I help you reach a new level of self-awareness and create a more confident and empowered version of yourself. Learn how Reiki will change your life. Go to wellnessinspired.com. When you live a life with love and compassion, you allow your blessings to manifest. Check out my Reiki training and Reiki practitioner mentoring program. and look for my soon-to-be-released ebook, Why Am I So Happy? At wellnessinspired.com and the paulavnetwork.com. Big hugs to everyone. Paula V. Welcome, welcome to another episode of Why Am I So Happy? Paula V here, sharing with you today just a fun, inspiring woman. I have with me today Cheryl Lynn Sherman. She is someone who enjoys nature, the ocean, family, friends, animal friends, and discovering new ideas. She is the author of a series of novels titled The Ocean Depths Series. I'm so excited to get more information about these novels. They sound so fun. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Please tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wrote this series and what it's about.
Yes, I started having dreams about a merman, Triton, and it was odd to me. And I thought, man, I'd like to do a watercolor of him. So I contacted a friend who was the model in life drawing classes at a college. And he had a bunch of the photos that had been taken during those classes, and he sent them to me. And I used his photos to help me have the shape, and I started doing these watercolors. As for me, I've always loved language. I've always loved learning. And nature is one of those things that I can't live without. I love going to the ocean. I'm heartbroken when I learn about pollution in different places and, sonar being used on the sea mammals.
Yes.
That kind of thing is rather gut-wrenching because the planet is our home. And if you take care of your home, you'll be healthy and your home will be a good place to be. But if you destroy it, where are you going to live? So basically, the Ocean Depths series is all about these gods and goddesses that are the mythological gods and goddesses that we all learned about in third and fourth grade and in junior high. And I've given them homes on the San Diego coast and deep within the ocean. And there are some islands, Pitcairn Island, Tahitian Islands, that chain right there, that I'm using in the series. And these gods and goddesses are protecting our planet. And they continually work at lessening the abuse that mankind is doing to the planet so that all of us have our chance to live here and learn and find our bliss, become enlightened, and then move on.
I love that. I love that. And I know one of your favorite sayings is find your bliss. I absolutely love that, Cher.
What I've enjoyed about that particular little tiny sentence is that it encompasses a different thing for every person that hears it. And to a mathematician, it might be having that huge chalkboard in their family room where they can figure out the most complex mathematical data and put it on that chalkboard. For another person, it might be going out and riding their horse out in a forest and enjoying being in the woods and the smells, the sounds of the birds. For another person, it might be owning a restaurant
and, yes,
and serving people, you know, and seeing them smile when they eat a delicious meal.
Yes, yes. And, I love that because finding our bliss can be a different thing for a different person. And isn't that beautiful? Isn't that wonderful?
it is wonderful. And I think as we mature as human beings, we begin to find out who we are. When we're young, we're striving to find ourselves. Now, some people are born knowing what they're going to do and going to be, and not me. There were so many things I loved. I couldn't nail anything down for a long time. I was good at music. I was good at art. I was good at writing. I was good at being a mother raising my children. I was good at nature and training horses and planting gardens. And there was so much I could do that I didn't quite find out who I was. And it took a lifetime until I finally realized I don't have all these distractions anymore. I can concentrate on one of these things that I really loved to do when I was younger but didn't have the time, and that's writing. So when I found this idea of Triton in my head and I watercolored and I started writing the story, Ocean Depths of Darkness, that title just came to me. It fit. It felt right. And I realized it was going to be a story about saving the planet. Now, that sounds, everybody writes those kind of stories. But this has a different twist because the gods and goddess names that I've used, I've put now are characters that are in-depth. They interact with one another. There's conflict among themselves. They're trying to help humanity and each other. And it's becoming such a world of its own with so many plots and subplots and twists and turns. My son said, and I thought it was funny, he said, "Mom, this is kind of like The Hobbit and Harry Potter and Game of Thrones all thrown together."
I love it.
And I'm like, gosh, how do you finish this? Cool. And he actually likes the book. And I wrote it for females, not for males. So it surprises me when men like it.
Yes. Yes. So were you thinking when you wrote it, this book would draw more women to it than males? Or were you purposely looking for more females to read it?
Yes, I wrote it for females. It's a dramatic love story. It's an adventure full of conflict. But the love story is primary because it's between the hero and the heroine. And the heroine is Calista Ann Saunders. And she's a high school student, a senior, and her truck gets pushed over the cliff one rainy monsoonal March afternoon. She's going to get pizza. She's supposed to be picking up her twin brother, Tad, and her truck rolls down the embankment, and Triton, the god, merman shapeshifter, had a vision of her falling over this cliff, and he's down there waiting for her truck to land in the ocean. And then he works at saving her. And when they're in the ocean and he's saving her life, she gets pricked with stonefish venom, which is not in our Pacific coastal water, and DNA of Triton's half-brother, Proteus, who is the bad guy. And he is called the old man of the sea as far as the mythological gods and goddesses. And he's always in conflict with Triton. He's very jealous. He's very opinionated, and he doesn't play well with others.
Oh, this sounds so fun.
Now, these gods and goddesses are timeless. They're immortal. So Triton will always be a 19-year-old merman, but he has lived through several lifetimes on several planets, and he remembers all these lifetimes. So these are not young beings, but they have a groove of where they like to present themselves. And Triton is always this 19-year-old shapeshifter where if he's on the street, walking down the street, he'll look like a young man. Now, he's done a lot of medical training. So as the years go by, sometimes he ages himself a little bit. And he can look different to every single person in a crowd, which is a really cool tool because some people will think he looks this way and some people think he looks that way. But it's always him at the core of that vision that they have. And they won't know it. But he will.
Yes, yes. So with this being a series, is it a continuance of what is happening with her and all of that?
Yes.
Is it all on that basis?
Yes. Ocean Depths of Darkness is book one, and it's published. It won the Mom's Choice Award 2016. It won the Beverly Hills Finalist Award. in March 2016, and at the London Book Fair, April 2016, it was one of 8 favorite titles, and there's hundreds of thousands of books at that book fair. I was just like, wow, you're kidding me. So I like writing a series that goes, it's like at the end of the book, book one, it's a cliffhanger. It abruptly ends at a very abrupt spot, and everybody's going, oh, no.
You can't do that.
That's right. So it leads into book two, and book two is done. I'm just doing some final edits now. I should be having it to the publisher by October. I have 3 more watercolors to get done for it. And then book three, Ocean Depth, A Life, is 100 pages in. So I only have about 500 or so more pages. And then I'll be doing about a year worth of editing because I like to edit over and over and get it exactly the way I want it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll go on to book 4 through 7.
Oh, my gosh. Cheryl, I could so see this becoming a movie. You know, it sounds like it could be a really fantastic movie.
Well, we were thinking the 3D versions in Avatar, that kind of thing, where because you could have the merman and the mermaid be in the depths of the ocean, but they
yes.
will be actual actors and actresses.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're shapeshifters, they're on land, they can be the physical presence of the actors and actresses. And it's big, it's epic scenes where you've got Triton's house is an absolute frickin' castle just about on the San Diego coastline. And the ocean would, you know, King Poseidon, Triton's father, has this beautiful castle down in the depths of the ocean. And so you've got these scenes where it'll just be eye-popping. So I'm working on a screenplay right now, and that will probably be done in the next 6 months, I'm thinking. So we're working hard.
Oh, that is so exciting, Cheryl. I love it. I love it. This sounds so fun. We do have to pop out a moment for a break. But everyone, I will be right back with Cheryl Sherman. Thank you so much. Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Paul Levy here with Cheryl Sherman. We are discussing her amazing novel series, Ocean Depths. And oh, my gosh, they sound so fun. And we were just chatting about the fact that it would be an amazing movie. So, Cher, I would love for you to just jump back in telling us about these great novels. And I would like you to share, if you would please, with the listeners, how they can order these books.
Ocean Depths, A Darkness by C.L. Sherman, which is my pen name, is on barnesandnoble.com. It's on kobobooks.com, and that's kobobooks.com. It's on play.google.com also, and it's on Amazon. So if you put in the name Ocean Depths, A Darkness by C.L. Sherman at any of those websites, it'll come up.
I love it. I love it. Well, share some more fun information about these novels. And I would also like you to touch on the point, the fact that you do the watercoloring. I love that. I think that makes it very unique.
My publisher was kind of, you know how you scratch your head and look at somebody like, what?
Yeah.
As I said, yes, these books are for 14 to 50-year-olds. And it's a long expanse of female audience that will enjoy them. And I want watercolors in them, the ones that inspired me to write the book series. And they looked at me like I had 2 heads because nobody does that. And so they said, well, we can't put your watercolors in as a watercolor in the paperback. It's too expensive because it's different paper. So they put them in as black and white, which is, they're there, they're pretty, but still, they're black and white. But in the e-version, they're all color. So they just pop in the color. You know, it's really nice. But for me, I needed those for my psyche to understand who my characters were. And that's how I first started writing the book, was by visualizing them and doing the watercolor.
Yes. Oh, that is so fun. That makes it so unique. I love it. I love that. And Cheryl, where did the idea come from? I believe you want to share, there's a lesson in the book. What lesson do you want the audience to have with what happens in the book and the fun that you share?
Well, I've noticed a lot of our books and movies and television shows are, they're getting away from the relationship of loving one another and the planet. They're very much about war, conflict, crime, bloodshed, and it's depressing. Mm. My husband will sit down and watch a movie, and they're well written, and the screenplays are great, and the action is superb, but the violence in them bothers me. I get up and walk away. I listen a little bit, and if sometimes I can't even listen, I got to go in another room and let that scene go, you know. But I wanted a book that had conflict without being disturbing. I wanted it to be mainly a love story. I wanted it to show that people can love in adverse situations, that they can find enlightenment, and they can also find their bliss, which is my own thing for me. Finding my bliss has helped me to write this book series. And that's what I hope for my readers, that they can be freed from this earthly plane if they read my book, and they can start to think in their own heads, gosh, maybe I could find something in life that will make me really excited, really happy, that will make me want to get up in the morning and go do it. That's what writing has done for me. And I think a lot of our media these days is depressing. When you go away from a show, you're like, oh, man, okay, let's think about something else.
Yes, or you're even fearful, you know, oh, is this going to happen to me? Or you're right. That's what you can take away from a movie.
And I want people to go, you know, when they get done with my book, the whole series, I want them to go, wow, that is so cool. And I want them to get lost in it. You know, when I was young, we went and stood in line forever and watched the Star Wars movies. And they were so cool. We'd never seen anything like them. It was amazing to us all. And it was so fun. The whole thing was fun. And I really enjoyed that. And it lifted me away from where I was. And I remember getting it. I had a Pinto station wagon. It was Pepsi-Cola color. It's what we call the four banger. And, you know, it was lucky if it did 65 on the freeway. And I got into that little car. It was brand new. And I got in that little car, and I was driving down the highway, and I thought, wow, they put those little reflectors on the highway. They've just been doing that new thing. And I'm like, wow, this looks like the kickoff launch pad for, you know, Star Wars. Oh, this is so cool. But, you know, it lifted me out of my world and put me in another world with heroes and heroines, and the bad guys didn't win. And I like that.
Yes.
And that's my story, is like that. The good guys are going to win. There's a lot of conflict and a lot of trouble, but there's a lot of love, a lot of enlightenment, and they're going to win. And every page has got lots of good conversation and emotional drama, so that a female can get in the middle of that and cry and laugh, mm-hmm, and smile and enjoy themselves. Because that's what I'm trying to do, is lift my audience away from their world, whatever it is, and get them to thoroughly enjoy themselves in the series.
Oh, Cheryl, you are so fun. Would you like to share a teaser with us of perhaps one little adventure that this romantic couple has in your series?
Well, you mean like read it from the book?
Or just an overall little, oh, well, this happens. It was really fun. Or,
well, let's see.
Yeah, I threw that out at you. Yeah.
It's a big book. And there's so much that I love it all. And you know, I've been working on it for several years and editing for several years, and I love it all. If I don't, I delete it and make sure I love whatever I play.
Yes.
What I like about Calista and Triton is Calista has a lot of issues. In her young life, she's lost her father and her grandfather. And she's trying to cope with, if I love someone, will they die? She's lost a couple of friends and who passed on. And so she's kind of in this, I don't know, is it, you know, post-traumatic syndrome, something that's just inside her. And Triton has his own issues and problems that he's gone through. And he has the death of a dear immortal, a non-immortal. She was a mortal god. She hadn't been given her immortality yet. Her name was Nehelania. She's also a goddess. That's a goddess name. And she died. And so he's been dealing with this pain. And so Calista's dealing with her pain. And they come together, and they're trying to have a relationship and get past these things that stop them from having a good time.
Yes.
Because a lot of people, they have all these things on their back, these weights of their own emotional drama and traumas, and they have a hard time relating to other people because of it. And I show in the book how they, through each scene, they discover things about each other, they discover things about themselves, and they learn to get past the hard things and start finding love and acceptance. And I think that's what I like about these two, because in the middle of all their conflict, they'll inch forward and find something good. They might fall back a little bit with some more drama and trauma, and then they inch forward into something else. So they're constantly growing and becoming able to love again. And I think that's what I like about this couple. It isn't just each scene. That's what the book is doing, and the next book is doing, and the next book is doing. Because it takes a long time for us to come out of things that we go through in life. And I don't know if that's ever happened to you, but
yes,
it has for me. And sometimes it takes years.
Yes.
But there's always love. There's always love. And there's always a way to find your bliss. In the midst of the harshest reality, there's always a way to find love somewhere.
Yes. Oh, I love it. Oh, I can't wait to read these novels. Oh my gosh, how fun. And oh my gosh, I would love to see this as a movie. It really feels to me, Cheryl, you have found your bliss as well in creating these beautiful novels.
Yes.
I love it. Well, with just a few more minutes to go, Cheryl, what last words would you like to share with the listeners today?
I think finding your bliss, my favorite thing, is the ultimate in anyone's life. And I know that we have jobs and children and parents and lives to live, and we don't always have time for ourselves, but ourselves, that's where our treasure is. Because if you find out who you are, you can do almost anything in life, and you can overcome anything. And I know life has hard times, but it also has good times. So I think finding our bliss is the ultimate in importance for each of us. And along that pathway, we become more enlightened. Because if you discover who you are, that's where your power is. Not who people say you are, not who your teachers, parents, friends, or kids say you are. It's who you really are. That's what each person needs to find. And then they will find that internal happiness that is so elusive.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Beautiful, Cheryl. Beautiful words. I am just so grateful to have had you on the show today. And
thank you.
Share. Oh, you're so welcome. The information on your beautiful writings. It's absolutely fantastic. And I think finding our own bliss, what a beautiful topic. I really appreciate that.
It's been fun. Really fun.
Yes. We may have to do another show down the road. I think so.
Oh, well, we can talk about Ocean Depths of Time, the next book in the series.
Exactly. Oh. Well, thank you so much, Cheryl. And a big thank you to our listeners out there in the U.S. and around the world. Thank you for joining us today. And I look forward to our next chat. Thank you, Cheryl. You have a great day.
Thank you, Paula V.
Thank you. Love, hugs, and blessings to everyone.